someone else's journey is our lesson.
We used to say, the difficult we do immediately, the impossible just takes a little more time.
Someone else's lesson is our gift.
I believe part of our responsibility is really to equip and inspire our students to ask those difficult questions.
Be encouraged by the stories that lift us all.
I came to Howard because I wanted to be the President of the United States.
Somebody saw something in me, and it's my duty to be that person for somebody else.
Now, join Dr. Wayne Frederick, President of Howard University, and his guest on The Journey.
He's an award-winning serial tech entrepreneur who has been on the cutting edge of software and mobile development. During the past two decades, he has founded and built five startup companies and has helped define the phrase inclusive innovation. Now he's bringing his business savvy to a public-private academic partnership that is poised to revolutionize how underrepresented entrepreneurs operate. Hello, I'm Dr. Wayne Frederick, and my guest today on The Journey is Aaron Saunders. How are you?
Pretty good.
Good. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Now, tell me a little bit about where you grew up.
I am a Navy brat, so I kind of bounced around every 4 years as my father got stationed from one location to another location until around high school when we got sent away to private boarding school.
Okay. And where did you go to?
I went to boarding school at a place called Berkshire School. It's in the bottom corner of Massachusetts where kind of New York and Connecticut intersect.
Okay. And what was that like? What was your exposure in particular to tech, and what got you interested in what you were going to do in college and then subsequently?
Well, I actually started programming when I was in sixth grade, so I was exposed to tech before I even got to high school. There was a computer sitting in the library when I was in middle school. I was small at that time, so I was picked on quite often. So I just didn't go outside for lunch anymore. I used to sit in the library and just read books. And one day I asked the librarian, what is that box? And they said it was a computer. And I said, can I open it? And they said, fine, because they didn't know what to do with it. And through that process, that is how I taught myself to program.
Okay, that's fascinating. Now, when you look back at that start and you think of the exposure kids today have, or for that matter, probably don't have, what about that experience in terms of your own exploration, you think probably helped you develop those skills more quickly versus now?
My father was an electronic technician, so my father actively supported my curiosity. I think, like, even now, because part of the work we do, we work with kids, and their interaction with the technology is in the lab or the school for that one instance. And then as soon as they get outside of the lab, they might not have computer access or internet access or anything like that at home. And so you just don't have that consistency, which I think is what you really need to excel or even just to become proficient. It's like if you look at sports, right? If I just played sports, you know, once a weekend, it's not the same as if I'm able to practice every single day.
Right. Understood. Now, so you attended Ohio Wesleyan University, got a Bachelor of Science in Computer Science.
What was interesting was that I actually went to college pre-med because I'm 53, so that was kind of a while ago. Computers and technology wasn't as pervasive, and so computers was a hobby to me. I never considered it as a professional career. So I went to college pre-med, and after the first semester, I realized that I wasn't pre-med material based on my grades, and so I just switched to computer science because it was just something that came natural to me. I was blessed in that I had the opportunity to get an internship my sophomore year, which allowed me to actually get practical experience instead of a lot of theory when I was in college, and I think that's what helped me throughout my career.
Now, I would say back then, or maybe if you could comment back then, what was the experience like in terms of a computer science curriculum to what you think it looks like today?
Back then, I took a COBOL class, right? So it was a while ago. And so it was just drastically different. The whole iterative process of learning, it just took a lot longer because you needed to get lab time and you needed to get printouts to debug your code. There wasn't the internet as there is today, where if you have a question, you can just go online and search or find a video on YouTube or you know, even chat with a friend to get an answer. You were much more siloed, and I think that there's a lot more opportunities now. If students are properly connected, there's a lot more opportunity to support that learning experience.
And then you subsequently attended the Stern School of Business at NYU, New York University, to get your MBA Information Technology Strategy and Marketing. Very specialized. How has that helped you in terms of the endeavors that you've been involved in around tech?
The interesting thing was that before I got my MBA, I had worked at a couple of tech startups. I had worked at a few up in Boston. And one of the things I kept seeing back then was that most of the tech startups were started by technologists, and there wasn't a lot of business experience with the technologists. And they just always ended up the same place. They weren't successful. And so when I got the opportunity to go to business school, I knew that I wanted to focus more on the business side of the business, you know, in all honesty, so that if I ever had my own business or if I wanted to move along in my career, that at least I wasn't using technology for technology's sake, but I was using technology to actually solve a business problem and add value to a business.
So let's first define the problem, right? 95% of entrepreneurs and 97% of venture capitalists are white or Asian, right? According to the National Bureau of Economic Research, published in January 2017. With that, what is the space for minorities and how do we overcome that particular problem?
I think one of the important things to realize is that there's a lot of small businesses and startups that are successful without venture capital money, right? And I think, unfortunately, this whole kind of glorification of the startup field makes everyone feel like, I need to go find a VC, I need to get this big money, and I need to make this huge exit. And so too often, there's not a focus on a business. There's a focus on raising the money. And I think we need to kind of refocus on how do I get a sustainable business, and then hopefully the money will come along after that. I think the other thing is that, you know, within the community of people of color, we need to acknowledge that there are folks in the community that actually do have money. I think sometimes the challenge is that the understanding of technology or innovation or entrepreneurship might not be there. So there's a longer educational process to help them understand the value of supporting and investing into startups and entrepreneurs.
You're listening to The Journey. My guest today is Aaron Saunders. I'm Dr. Wayne Frederick. Now, I guess as you define the problem around entrepreneurship and venture capitalists, let's spend a little bit of time on solution-wise. So yes, you may not need as much venture capital. I'll accept that. But I think African Americans in general tend to be risk-averse.
I agree.
And walk me through where you think that comes from, and then how do we combat that?
I mean, I think part of it, the mentality is that it took so long to get what I have, I'm not going to risk giving it up. I mean, I know that when I left, I had a very good job working for the government. I had a top-level clearance, so I got paid very well. And I finally decided to start my own business. And there were some friends of mine who were like, why are you doing that? You know, right. Like, you've got it made. You have a good job. You have money. You know, right. What do you want to do
retirement
that for?
Set. Yes. Right.
But, I mean, for those of us who are excited about that entrepreneurial spirit and those of us who want to do something, and also I think if you want to create sustainable wealth in a community, you cannot do it with a 9-to-5 job, in my opinion. And I had felt that it was time for me to do something. I was getting to a point in my life where I realized if I don't do it now, I never will do it. And I took the leap. I think that culturally we need to realize that without risk, there's no real reward. We cannot make the gains that we need to make as a community unless we're prepared to take some risks.
Right.
And the challenge is that we need the community to support us as we take those risks.
So I think you make a good point, and that brings me to a different, I guess, perspective. Because on the aggregate level, that sounds fine, and especially when you talk about community. But once you take it down to the individual level, the risk almost seems insurmountable. And so the incubator that we've entered into at Howard University, I would assume, is one of those types of things in terms of creating a pathway where people can get comfortable and see that. So tell me about the Inclusive Innovation Incubator here at Howard.
So it actually ties back to what we were just saying about the community. At a high level, Our fundamental objective is to create a dense community of diverse entrepreneurs and individuals creating products and services for diverse communities. By creating a dense community, our hope is that we can provide that support and that structure that individuals need so that they look around and they see other people going through the pain with them. They can hopefully support them when they're at that point where they're like, yo, this is a mistake. I need to get out, and someone can kind of help them along the way. But then afterward, once we create that dense community, the idea is to try to get money, right?
Right.
Trying to bring a VC or angel or someone into a community where there's maybe 10 or 15, you know, viable companies isn't going to work. They're just simply not going to come. But if we have 40 or 50, because that's the whole density thing, right? Then there's a higher likelihood that they'll come, right? And then there's a higher likelihood that there might be a winner in there. And by winner, it doesn't need to be a big exit, because as you stated earlier, there's such a small percentage of actual successful exits. There just needs to be something that someone believes in enough to put money on the table, right? And then once the first person puts money on the table, then other people say, hey, there's this thing going on over there by Howard University, and there's all these diverse entrepreneurs, and there's some good stuff. Maybe I should go check that out and see what's going on. Right.
Now, this is an unusual setup because it involves the D.C. government. It involves a private, historically black college and university, and it involves private partnership. So tell me about bringing all of those pieces together, and why would this be successful?
I think it's definitely a dynamic situation, but I think that as we work through this and we reach a successful point, it will be a model that others will want to follow. Because I think when you tie together the support of the state and local government, you tie in the support of an entrepreneur who's connected to the community, and then you tie in the support of an HBCU who has the history, has the students, has access. I believe that we can make some great things happen. I think that being able to connect all of those pieces of the community together will help create that dense community. I think it can help give the students opportunity and access. I think it will help members in the community. It will give them opportunity to interact with the students, find interns, find knowledge, find insight. And I think for the state and local government, we can help create small businesses. Small businesses drive the economy. Small businesses is what everybody wants. People want other folks paying taxes. They want to increase the tax base. So I think if we can make it work, not only does it work for the three organizations we just mentioned, but then we can start to kind of chip away at some of the other challenges, like the lack of diversity in the venture capital community, the lack of diversity overall in the tech ecosystem. I mean, when we nail this, right, others will start to look and say, all right, what did those guys do and how can we duplicate it?
Right. So I'm going to push you on two fronts. One is on the venture capital front. Is there any intention in the near future or down the road to create a funding mechanism that smaller investors who may be in the community who want to invest $100, $1,000 into a fund that then helps fund these types of projects, will there be an opportunity to do something like that again would be different, innovative, and would bring the community engagement up to a higher level?
Right, so at N3 specifically, we do have on our plan to create sort of the ability to crowdfund so that the community itself can fund it. I know there's some other individuals that I've spoken to who have recently created an angel group, but I know they also want to find some other way to get non-accredited investors to be able to support the community also. I think a lot of it, you know, as I stated earlier, is an education and understanding. I think that venture capital investment in tech is something that's not very often spoken about in our community, and we need to get more people knowledgeable about it. The idea of investing in real estate is something that's abundantly clear to a lot of folks, but the idea of investing in technology or small business is something that isn't. And I think for us to kind of get where we need to be, we need to change that.
Now, for someone listening out in the community who has an idea and wants to come by and see how this works, talk about the actual mechanics. So somebody shows up situated on Georgia Avenue and says, you know, I have a great idea that I've been trying to get funded. I want to see if I can, you know, come in here and use this as my mechanism to get that done. What are the steps they then go through?
Right now, the steps are to come down and then sign up. And then what we do after they sign up is we have a couple of things that we are working on. Is a accelerator program that we're running inside of the space that will provide support for entrepreneurs that want to come through. It's based on a design thinking model. Along with that, there are mentors that come along with that program that members of N3 will have access to. We also have external mentors that we will try to line you up with to help support what your vision is, to help you find the things that you need to know. And then also through our network, when it comes to capital, we can direct you to individuals that we know that have access to funds and are looking specifically for diverse entrepreneurs.
Thanks for being here. My guest today has been Aaron Saunders of Inclusive Innovation Incubator, IN3. I'm Dr. Wayne Frederick. Please join me next time on The Journey.
You've been listening to The Journey with Dr. Wayne Frederick on the Howard University Radio Network.